Lights out, we're underway. Smoke Sport Republic of Podcast.
That's on unreal. In, boys. Boys, another special episode. Legendary commentator, Gavin Emmett.
It's very kind of you to say so.
Thank you very much for
coming. In a good
on.
Or a bad way, because legendary can work both ways.
No. This is in a good way. This is in a good way for sure.
It's a little bit surreal because I've been hearing your voice since I was probably 5 years old. Oh, and now sure. And now you're in front of us, and it's weird. It's almost weird. So it's very exciting to have you on.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Good to see you, lads. Yep. Looking forward to a good weekend here.
Good weather, hopefully.
Oh, fingers crossed. I mean, after last year, I think anything's a bonus,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
If we get 2 days out of it, we'll be sweet on that one. So Jesus. I think it might rain on Friday, but who knows?
It's funny, the riders we're talking to aren't worried about the race. They're worried about practice one. All they want is some laps on this track. Like, it's just, it is interesting.
Yeah, well, it's going to be. It's a tough place. It's a tough time of year, as you guys know. You're from the area. Yeah. And to come here this time of year, it can be beautiful. But it can also be the worst of the worst, right. You know, as we found last year.
Well, we're here Superbike weekend in February and it's just lush.
It's pristine.
It's glorious. I've been here testing. I used to come here. Then they used to do the testing at the start of the year. I'll never forget standing at the hay shed and watching Ruben Schau stack it right in front of me during testing in the right-hander. Yep. At the hay shed, and it was absolutely glorious conditions. Mm. It is a shame we don't come, but we all know why. It is with the Formula One at one end of the year and the MotoGP at the other end of the year. So it's not going to happen. It's not going to change.
No,
not while Formula One wants to be at this.
Well,
the start
that's
of the year,
true.
So.
There's been a big thing with Formula One. We had a big ticket debacle last week when they had tickets on for sale. So,
oh really?
Yeah, it was a massive thing. A lot of unhappy people. So,
what it went on the Oasis scale of what we had in the UK, where no one could get tickets and then they ran the price up.
About,
really,
dynamic pricing. Oh, is that a new thing everywhere? Is it?
Oh man, it went wild in the UK for like a week.
Yeah, that's
when people
try
to get Oasis tickets.
I clicked on and bought 6 tickets and it was $525 checkout, $800 each for grandstand.
What?
Yeah, that's it. That's how it is these days. And like Formula One is such a popular sport, and I think MotoGP is going to start changing into that direction with Liberty Media coming aboard.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see if that all gets ratified, because it still hasn't. You know, they did say at the end of the year, but we'll see. They were confident enough that it's going to go through.
Yep.
So we'll see. But
so papers haven't been signed officially yet.
I don't know what the situation. They're not allowed to comment, basically. Yeah, once they're in that process of making an acquisition, it's got so many hoops to go through. I know it'll have to go through regulatory approval in the EU and in the US and these other places as well. Monopolies and Mergers Commission blocked it when CVC were doing it.
Mm.
When they took over Formula One, they had to divest themselves of MotoGP. So, but that was a long time ago. They're confident it will go through. So. Who am I to argue against it?
It's going to be good for the sport. I think any money coming into the sport's good.
They're not there. Basically, people who own it now, Bridgepoint, a venture capitalist, the Canadian pension company, they're here, there to make a profit. That's what they do. Don't get me wrong. Liberty are going to be there to make a profit, but they come with money and looking to build something and build something long-term is my understanding of it. It's a they're not looking to... Venture capitalists want to take a certain amount out every year. They'd be happy, I suppose, in my understanding, you'd be happy with... You know, let's break even for a couple of years and then see where we go.
We know the product is so good. I mean, best racing in the world. And even like the kids, the Moto3 boys, we think Moto3 is the best motorsport racing
absolutely
in the whole entire world.
In its purest form, it really is.
Oh, no, it's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic to watch Moto3 is. Moto2 has been great, actually.
Yeah,
a change of tyres has given it something. MotoGP, you know, you are talking about the pinnacle. There's been, at the start of the year, remember there were a few... Absolute crackers, real classic races. It's gone off a little bit. I reckon it's going to come back, including this weekend. Yeah. I think this is one of those places that always lends itself. Mm. But as things start getting a bit more desperate, top of the championship,
definitely.
That's when you're going to start having people start to make desperate moves. Think of Martin. You know, when he took out Marquez in Valencia end of last year. That's desperation, and that we're getting to that stage now. So, hopefully,
most definitely.
Hopefully.
Even last year with the tyre gamble. Down here?
Oh, yeah, that was crazy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, we went with the soft, didn't they? And everyone else had gone with the medium, wasn't it? And Izarco came through. That was a cracker. How good was that race?
That was amazing.
And I remember saying at the time, or everyone was saying at the time, let's have two races at Phillip Island every year. You know, when we didn't have the Sunday, it was like, doesn't matter, can we come back next week?
Yeah.
Because it was a...
We wish.
So it's usually a good race. Although I was just in Melbourne before coming down here Foxtel, he had an old race on. It was Casey winning from Valentino here. I'm guessing it must have been 2009. something around that. He was a white Ducati. I think it was in about 2009. And there was him, and Rossi was about a second and a half behind. And then third place, Danny Pedrosa was 22 seconds behind us.
Yeah, crazy.
You know, and it was like, wow, we're talking about last week. Yeah. It was all spread out in Japan. You know, and Brad Binder, who was sixth, was 18 seconds behind. And you're thinking, is this a state of things to come? It's been like that, you know, over the years.
Yeah, that's right.
There's cycles in these things. And
yeah, it's interesting. It's like we were watching the Hitting the Apex documentary last night, and like the personalities were insane. You had Simoncelli hating Pedrosa. You had Rossi hating Stoner. You had everything. But the racing wasn't as good as it is now. And we're quick to forget that. Yeah. Like there were some big gaps in the field though back then.
There always have been. Yeah. You go back to Mick's era. You go back to any time before that, and there were huge gaps between everyone. And it's really easy to forget that the whole field at times this year have been within a second. Mm. And you get races like Japan, and you think, wow, this is rubbish. But then you get that in racing.
Yeah.
That sometimes when it's not, they try and make it as least artificial as possible. They try and keep the rules as open as possible. You've got to have certain limits in certain places, but you know it. I think it's as good as it's been. Mm. I do think that.
Yeah.
It's still, you know, could be improvements. But, you know, I still think it's, you know, for a top-level motorsport, there aren't, I don't know if there's any better. I don't think there is.
No, we're definitely with you. Yeah. I guess that's a bit more prominent because you've had the tyre pressure issues. And like you see, Mark Marquez was in Aston. He had to back off, and like Didier or someone was around him.
All the aero issues.
All the aero stuff. And I guess that's made that prominent thing. But going back to Bagnaia and Martin, we haven't really seen them come together much, you know. And we're just kind of, we'll talk about this last night. We're waiting for them to really battle it out.
I think it's got to happen at some point. It didn't really happen last year, though, did it?
No, not really.
Really got a head-to-head, and that you find that sometimes. That I think one weekend it'll be Martin's, and one weekend it'll be Pecco's go. But I do genuinely, I'm of the belief that with Pecco behind, especially, desperation stakes will kick in at some point. I've got the feeling that someone's going to have to show a wheel, show a bit of leg, show a bit of fairing, you know, and bash people out of the way, because it's going to get to that point where I need the points.
Yeah, as rough as it is on Martin, we're just waiting for him to make that big mistake. And I think all three of us are in the same. I think Bagnaia is just so cool, calm and collective. And
yeah, he is. But if you think about it, he's made more mistakes than Martin this year.
Yeah.
But you do, I agree with you. You always feel Jorge's got one in him.
He's
got a mistake in him.
Yeah.
Also, the pressure is on the person leading as well in many ways. You've got nothing to lose when you're coming from behind as Bagnaia is. And he's been there and done it. So
he's done it for the last two championships.
The other thing with Martin is it his last chance? Yeah, who knows what's going to happen?
Well, that's another big question, isn't it?
Where Aprilia are. So that'll be ticking around in his head as well.
It's like, a lot of pressure.
I've got a bike to develop next year, so this could be my one thing. And I think also, you speak to anybody in the paddock, there'll be a lot of people who won't admit it, a lot of people who don't admit it, but there is no way, I said it as soon as Jorge said he's going to Aprilia, that's him signed his championship away, because there's no way Ducati will let the championship go to Aprilia, as in the number one place.
There's
no way. I just can't see it. And I've spoken to people in other manufacturers who would say, if it was our manufacturer, I'm telling you, things will be happening underhand. No one would admit it. No one would ever say it. You know, they're still giving parts out. They're still doing all the right things, saying all the right things. But you cannot tell me that this project that cost them 50 million, 100 million, whatever it costs them. You can't put a price on what it's cost to develop to get to this stage of MotoGP. You cannot tell me that you want your number one plate to be sat on another 100%. Manufacturer's bike next year.
100%. And then I guess that makes us wait for maybe they're a dud rear tire or something to come out of Valencia.
We call it the big red button. GG's with a briefcase.
Yes.
And it's, when does he get that big red nuclear button out that he and Davide Tardozzi have to have keys at the same time? To go like that.
It's actually like that, though. It is actually like this. Like, it's crazy.
But that's they are here. I don't know if you've listened to Tardozzi. He did a podcast with Neil Hodgson, actually, Ducati Diaries. I don't know if you listened to it. And what came through on that is they will stop at nothing to win. They will do anything,
anything to win,
because they are all working 24/7, 365 to win.
Yeah.
And it's all about winning. It's about nothing else.
And that's why they're so prominent. We spoke about it not too long ago. People forget Ducati went through the dark years, you know, and it's everyone's talking about how it's Ducati Cup, but they went 20 years just about.
It was 15 years from 2007 of Casey winning to a couple of years ago to Pecco winning that they did not win the championship. Mm. And arguably at times they had a bike to do so. Other times they definitely didn't have, you know, the bike to be able to do so. They'd gone in different directions or whatever. And it's been it was a long, hard road to get here. So yeah, I'm not one of these, oh, it's a Ducati Cup people. I sort of think, well, it's up to the others. That's the challenge of Grand Prix racing. And people do give Dorna stick for certain things here and there, but they've been willing to change the regulations. And this is the concessions for Yamaha, Honda, CRT, open bikes over the years. They try as much as they can to put a little bit of pressure on the manufacturers to make sure that the championship is level. And the concessions clearly are working slowly for Yamaha and Honda. Yep. There's been improvements and it'll come next year that there'll be other steps forward. But the championship's willing to do that to make sure that they have a close championship. Yeah. And that's, you know, could you see that happening in Formula One?
No, God, no.
I couldn't see it happening in the same way because, you know, we're talking money talks and Concord agreements where Ferrari are getting more than other people and this sort of thing. That's, you know, money is everything there. Whereas here, the manufacturers are allowed a certain level of input and power in the championship, but they work politically with them. So aero's being reduced, the ride-out devices are going from 27, but, you know, you can use them up to then. And all that, as far as I'm concerned, is horse trading. You know, from Dorna, you've got to, you know, keep your cards that you've got and know when to play the ones that you need to keep the championship in order to keep everyone happy, basically.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a quick reminder, we are proudly supported by the great team down at Moto Heaven. They are absolutely unbelievable to deal with. And if I were you guys, I'd definitely head over to their website.
Yes, you never pay full recommended retail price at Moto Heaven and free delivery for any order over $100.
100%. And they've got the best, most usable website in the whole motorcycle industry. Dare I say the world. They got parts finders. You can chuck in any bike you want. If it's a gold KX250 or an R1, you can find anything you want. Helmets, they got everything. Head to motoheaven.com.au where you will get everything that you need. That's a guarantee.
Do it.
It's such a fall from grace, though, for Honda. Like, who would have thought Repsol's leaving?
To lose Repsol.
We just went into one of the merchandise stands and they were selling, buy one, get one free for Repsol Honda. And, like, when would you ever see that? And now they're at the back of the grid, they've struggled to, you know, sign people on. And
it is the strangest thing to see, isn't it? Having dominated, whether it be, well, whoever they've had on their bike over the years, it has been the bike to be on. Mm-hmm. It's the number one team in the paddock. And it's still, if you look at all the setup, it still is, you know, it's absolutely spot on. And they just, COVID messed it all up for them, for Yamaha and the Japanese manufacturers. And it's all about this championship based in Europe and things happening in Europe and being able to, you know, like the overnight specials Michelin used to do. It's almost like overnight or week-to-week specials that Ducati have been bringing or KTM have been bringing and that. And the Japanese haven't kept up and suddenly they're having to go Max Bartolini for Yamaha.
Yep.
You know, you're going to have Romano Veziano is going to come across to Honda, which is, I can't even believe you're saying it.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, the technical director at Honda is going to be an Italian.
It's crazy.
It's wild.
But they have to do it because it is the way that things have been working.
Yeah.
As in, you can't just do it the slow way, the Japanese way, tried and trusted. You test stuff a million times before it even goes on the
That's
bike.
Right.
And then you test it in testing before it even gets put on a race weekend. You know, the Austrians and the Italians have been, does that look all right? Is it working? Has the test rider had a go? Yeah, stick it in the bike.
Yeah.
You know, and it's when you've got eight bikes in your Ducati, you get the flexibility to do that.
100%. Yeah, it's definitely, like you said, it's that Japanese mentality. Probably a lot of pride, as we always say.
But this is the way it's been done.
Yeah.
And this has worked. And we have won more than anybody else has won in this championship.
Exactly.
Because of it. And so you can understand them. But the game has moved on and changed very quickly, very rapidly over the last 5 years. Yeah. And COVID, I think, just accelerated it all. Mm.
Do you think with Honda, a part of the downfall was they relied too much on Marc Marquez?
I think that's got to be a part of it, you know. But even if you listen to him back in 18 and 19, there were complaints about the direction they were going in and the feeling of certain parts. His 2019 season, if you look back at it now, was just phenomenal, really. If you think, I don't think anyone at the time, if we were talking about it, would have said that was the best bike. Mm. Even then, yeah, true. Just felt like he was wrestling it around certain issues that it had. But I think that he made a difference, and that will have caused a little bit of complacency. I'm sure it will have. And, you know, unique riding styles as well. There was that with Casey Stoner and Ducati as well. Mm. And just magic of certain riders maybe polishing a bike that wasn't necessarily
A bucket of bolts, as we like to say.
Yeah, exactly. So they perhaps made bikes that seemed better than they were.
It's a good point with Casey. We had this conversation last night. With some riders just click with a bike. Like that bike, Ducati back in 07, was 30Ks quicker than anything else, but cornered not that great. It was so hard in the corners, but he just made it work. Like, it's just incredible. And a lot of people we talk to is saying Casey is the most talented rider they've ever worked with or seen.
Yeah, but quite possibly. Mm. I think you see it was just natural ability.
Mm. Yeah.
Natural ability out of the box. Or I'd say natural, there's so much of it, but a lot of it as well is honed from being very, very young riding motorcycles, as a lot of them are as well. So, yeah, but he was just insane. Insane, the things he could do on the motorcycles, particularly around here at Phillip Island.
Yeah, dominating.
He went five years in a row, didn't he? I think it was seven.
I think six or seven in a row. Because Valentino did seven or eight. I'd be wrong on this. I think he did eight in a row at Mugello. I think Casey did seven in a row here. It may be seven and six, but I just remember something like that.
It's crazy. I've been really excited to have you on this one, Gavin. You've been in commentary for a long time. Mm. I'd love to know how you got into it and when did you actually start? What year did you...
I started working for Dorna back in 2001.
Yeah.
And then started going on site from Mugello that year. But I was writing the website, the MotoGP.com website. I started working on the TV side during that year after I'd been there. My first race commentary was here, Phillip Island, 2002. Jeremy Williams was on pole position. And myself and Matt Roberts with Nick Harris in pit lane.
Oh, was
interesting one that the Dorna hierarchy shoved into the mix. I think they were just trying to twist Nick's balls a little bit, probably about a new contract for the future. But yeah, so 2002 was my first commentary. Yeah, so since then that I've been doing it. I got into it through Matt Roberts. Actually, me and him, we were friends from university. We both spoke a lot of languages and they needed someone to edit the MotoGP website in, translate from loads of languages, speak to riders in lots of different languages as well. So that was how I got into it, really. Yeah, and I'd always wanted to be, from a little kid, I wanted to be a commentator. Never thought it was going to happen.
Yeah,
you dream of these things and then, ended up doing a little bit of everything. Through Dorna, worked in the communications for them for a while, for 3 years. That's when I laid off for 1 year, 2006, I think. I did a little bit of commentary in there. And then myself and Nick Harris took it through then to 2013 was my last season with Dorna. And then I switched to BT, as it was, now TNT Sports in the UK.
Yeah, gotcha.
Doing a little bit of everything, reporting, commentary, presenting across the board, really. So, this is my... 24th season. That'd be right from 2001.
Yep.
Wow.
That's amazing.
24th season in Grand Prix racing. So be up the quarter of a century.
That's crazy.
So I've been in this paddock working for more than half my life.
You would have seen so many changes over the years.
Yeah. I've seen it grow massively. It was already, when I got in 2001, it was, MotoGP, the concept had been announced. They were calling it MotoGP.com. That, it was 2002 was on the horizon. We knew it was coming, knew it was happening. And more people joining. I was one of them who joined at the time. They had a little bit of a lull because 2001 was the old Twin Towers and there was a bit of a, not a credit crisis, that was obviously later down the line, but there was a bit of a lull, wasn't there, in business at that time, and they laid a few people off. And then, just seeing it grow. Dorna's grown massively.
What a time to start as well, Rossi. Coming through.
For his first 500, as in first winning championship. Obviously, he'd won through the year before. It was brilliant. And I was so lucky because my job entailed working for TV stations that weren't able to go to races. So like Fox in Australia, they'd send someone occasionally a couple of times a year, maybe, you know, they'd send, I think, I can't remember who it was at the time, might have been Daryl Beattie or Barry Sheen, or they'd send someone over. I remember seeing him at Donington, might have been that year. But my job was, for the TVs who didn't turn up, I'd go and do all the interviews.
Yep.
So for the French writers, I'd do it for French TV. For the, you know, just the TVs that weren't on site, to the Hungarians, the Finns. I remember get to know all these young kids. It was Gabor Tomasi or Mika Kallio when they were kids, when they were first coming into the championship. And I got to speak to them at the end of the day. It's a bit like what Jack Appleyard will be doing now in a role for Dorna, and just going around and speaking to everyone all the time. And it was good fun. And it was obviously, you had a lot more access. It was a lot more open. Yeah. You know, there was a lot less PR people acting like bodyguards and getting in the way from being able to speak to people. And it was a really cool time to be involved in it.
That's awesome.
Golden years like that 09 season, 10 season.
Is that what you count as your golden time?
I find that's when I sort of like got obsessed with MotoGP.
Right.
And I think it was yourself, Nick Harris, commentary. Like that for me was like, I was hooked, you know, like, it's insane. I think a lot of people would say the last few years are golden years for MotoGP, but it's interesting. That's when I first started getting into it, and I think you're probably from an earlier age, James. And
I got into it at an earlier age, but I actually think personally the golden years was the Marc Marquez kind of Dovi years.
Yeah.
This is because of the racing was so good.
You've got to think, 2016, how many winners did you have in that season? Was it 9 or something?
Yeah.
Ridiculous. That was a fantastic season. 2006 for me is the one that always stands out as one of the great seasons. Nicky Hayden winning the championship at the end. It had so many twists and turns. Mm. Like, Nicky won the championship winning two races.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just an incredible, incredible season to be involved in. But again, a lot of people will hark back to the 90s. It's whatever you grow up in.
Exactly.
It's your golden era. The one that, you know, you mentioned it earlier about, you look at the racing and actually, was it as good as it is now? Generally, it wasn't. Generally, if you look back, you know, there's people who say, oh, I remember, you know, the Aggo days. But I've heard people say, I remember the Aggo days. They were rubbish. He was lapping everyone apart from the person in second. And he was a minute behind, you know.
Yeah.
And so, but they were incredible sportsmen in their own right. And that's where MotoGP or Grand Prix 500s in its day was the pinnacle of two-wheel sport.
Yeah.
You know, it was the one that you wanted to win, whichever championship you're in the world, the place that you'd always have wanted to be. There was a period where World Superbikes in the 90s, in Britain in particular, people looked at that and thought, oh, you know, I want to be Carl Fogarty. I want to be topping World Superbikes. And it had a really good run then after Foggy and obviously Troy Bayliss and everyone, you know, that, and it challenged, and they were trying to make it, you know, like MotoGP, but still, I think deep down people wanted to see Foggy in Grand Prix racing. I know he did a few bits here and there in it, but it never happened, you know. But still, the pinnacle has always been Grand Prix, and so that's the one everyone wants to, you know, the trophy they all want on their mantelpiece.
Yeah, we always talk about the superbikes and MotoGP, and as you just said, there's a lot of names over the years. Like we talk about Toprak. He would be a star in MotoGP, and like that would be a commentator's dream, I'm assuming, as well, if he came over.
I'm convinced he'd be superb. And how great would it be to have another nationality involved, someone like that? I'm all for getting people in from different nationalities. I just think it's good for the championship. I know merit is important and people have to be there on merit. I'm all for that. I do agree. But also, when you've got 11 Spanish riders in a championship, I think that the championship loses a little bit of luster in some way.
100%.
But they are all there on merit. You can't tell me one person who isn't there and doesn't deserve to be there.
Well, like
I think
David
there are people
Alonso,
that sometimes people stay around longer than they should because they're Spanish or whatever. But I think also it's, you know, it is hard for them to get in. Anyway, long and short, I'd love to see Toprak in MotoGP. Absolutely, I agree with you. And there's been people over the years, I'd love to have seen Johnny Rey in MotoGP.
Yeah, that's another big one we always talk about.
I'd love to have seen Johnny.
Because he had that wild card and he finished fifth. Like, that's, I mean.
And everyone always tells me he had a bad time when he replaced Casey. He replaced Casey for two rounds. Right, there was one in Misano, I remember. And was it in Estoril? I can't remember. I think it was Estoril. There were two races anyway. And he acquitted himself really bloody well. Like he did. Bear in mind, he's jumping on a different bike, different tyres, a different race weekend in the thick end. If you put now, can you imagine that Toprak went and did MotoGP for a weekend and finish top 10.
You'd be shocked.
Everyone would be saying, oh my God.
Yeah.
But because he was on the Repsol, like when Johnny did it, everyone was like, ah, should have been do better. I don't think he should have.
That's a crazy thing to say.
So much confidence in the bike, the tyres. Like, because I think Bautista wild card and did, but he was injured, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was injured.
Yeah.
But he was in the paddock before.
Yeah.
But he did have an idea about tyres and that. Yeah. But still, you know, we did expect more from Bautista when he did it, but he did have his shoulder problem. But yeah, over the years, there are people that I'd love to see. But look, Johnny Ray, for example, or Carl Fogarty or Toprak, they are brilliant, brilliant racers. And they are of a level that is better than riders in MotoGP. I've no doubt about that.
Yeah, 100%.
You know. But I'm sure they'd have loved to have had a go in MotoGP. Mm. I'm sure they'd love to have been given a proper go. And I know Johnny never really got offered the ride that you want to be on. Mm. He got offered second tier.
Yeah.
And I think it might have been the case with Toprak. It might have been you have 1 year when it was a satellite Yamaha and then possibly go on to factory. And he just thinks, why do I want to risk? I might have a first year. It doesn't quite work. And then I'm done. And then I'm, you know, whereas I'm making more than enough doing what I'm doing in World Superbike
and being competitive,
really competitive, winning races and winning championships.
Don't forget about how much money matters. Like we talk about that on the pod. Like a lot of people we speak to,
that was the biggest thing we figured out.
Like, it's like, why aren't you going here? Why aren't you going here? Well, I'm getting Quartararo's getting paid $12 million at Yamaha. Well, of course you're going to stay. You got a family to feed. You know, it's crazy.
We use it quite a lot. Neil Hodgson, who I commentate with, he has this phrase called stock value, and he hates himself for saying it, but he says it all the time. And he goes, you know, because ultimately this is a rider's career, and it's a short career, and it can be over tomorrow. And so if you are in a line to make four times as much money for doing something, then it's got to play a role in what you're going to do. Mm. It has to. And who would blame that person?
100%.
We have it a lot in football, in soccer, in the UK, where I'm a fan of Leeds United, right? And fans will get annoyed because someone will move to another club when they're earning twice as much money. Oh, they should do it for the shirt. They should do it. If I, as a commentator, was offered four times as much to come and commentate for Foxtel in Australia, do you know what I'd be doing? I'd be up in sticks and, you know, doing that, of course, because I'm looking after my family and everyone's just doing the same.
Yeah, yeah. It's a job at the end of the day.
Their careers are short.
Yeah.
Valentino Rossi might have gone on till 42 or whatever, but in general,
it's 10 years usually. 10 years is your career.
Exactly. Yeah. You've done it.
Yeah.
A lot of them are starting now at, or were starting at 16. A lot of these at the top now start at 15, Mark Marquez and co. And they can be done. Look, Bradley Smith lost his MotoGP ride when he was 27 or something. And then hasn't had a top ride. He's been in Moto E, he's done the odd thing here and there. And you think, that can't be right, can he? You can't tell me he's washed up. Mm. But that's what happens. So you're doing the right thing, aren't you? Taking the opportunities financially when they come. Yep. And it sounds crude. It sounds a rough way to do things, but I can't blame them.
No, you can't blame them. I want to know, favourite race you've ever commentated?
Favourite race commentated? Probably going to have to be 2009, Barcelona. Yeah. I hate listening back to it because I just get far too giddy on the last lap.
The commentary on that last lap is what makes that whole race. And when you rewatch it and you get the chills down your spine, you go, that's because the commentary. Like, it's amazing.
So myself and Neil, who are commentating, we talk about it a lot. And one of the things that I've always tried to do, and I've learned, in fact, Nick was good at that, is creating jeopardy. It's what we call it. Creating a story, creating what might happen. Probably we know it's not going to happen, but what could happen? What are the possibilities of something going, you know, a race change around? Someone's leading by 5 seconds. Oh, we've seen him fall off. You know, creating that kind of jeopardy in there. And in that race in particular, I remember doing this interview with Jorge Lorenzo, and it wasn't a spoken interview. It was for the race program. So if you've got the race program from that race weekend, right, it will say about turn 10, 11 coming round. Yep. So 11, then 12, 13, 14. In that race program is the interview I'd done with Jorge Lorenzo, where it says, if you get through this corner, you're all right. your home and host, pretty much.
So famous.
And in my commentary, I talk about that because I'm like, genuinely, he said this to me, that it's done. But we all felt that there was, you know, there was, it was never over until it's over kind of situation. And then Valentino did what he did. And so, yeah, it's one of those that were, which people love the race. We did a thing on TNT, which was when COVID was on, the race of all time, and that was the one that was picked.
It's all everyone's race. Memory. It's just an amazing, and the circumstances that goes behind that, and their personalities.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's right. You know, it's everything that goes
the wall
it.
Down the garage. Yeah. You know, everything that was going on between them, the tires, the using different tires at one point, all these sorts of things. It was magical.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously, in the end, that led to Valentino's championship year, and the rest, as they say, is history. But I genuinely hate listening to it. We because it gets played a lot. It gets played a lot on our stuff when we're talking about when we go to Barcelona, for example, and I just hear my voice, lose my voice in the final corner, and it's like, God.
It's so iconic.
When the commentators are like out of breath at the end, that's when you know it's like elite.
That's it.
You know, that just goes back. That will go down in history forever. You know, like you're gonna hear it forever. I'm sorry, but you are.
You know, the last year's race here was pretty good. I seem to remember with Joan Zarco, that was one of those where, nothing's gonna happen. He's out in front, but he's got a soft tire. Again, it's about the jeopardy, and then suddenly you're thinking, oh my God, it is actually happening. And wait, it's Joan Zarco who's going to take his teammate in the championship battle. And wait, Joan Zarco's never won a race, all these things. Yeah. And so that was one of those, actually, all the things coming together.
Stars aligning.
You know, there's a lot of luck involved, definitely. But as I say, one of our things is let's create jeopardy. Let's make sure that there is a reason for someone to watch. Let's give people, if it's not a great race like Japan last week, let's give someone a reason to watch this. What might happen? What could happen? What are we watching? Is it a changing of the tides? Or, you know, trying to tell the story around the actual race itself rather than, you know, people say to us a lot, oh, talk about what's on screen. It's like, yeah, you can see what's on screen. Let's talk about the story behind it or what might happen.
Mm. Yeah, I find that coverage with MotoGP, they don't show a lot of the back markers battles. And, like, I find you have no control over what you see on the vision.
Oh, no, absolutely nothing. Yeah. Apart from a few snide comments here and there saying, oh, we really would like to be seeing the battle that's further back.
Yeah.
And I do understand it, though. I will say from a director's point of view, and I mean, I do speak a lot to the directors, the TV directors, Enrique, who does it now, Sergio did it before. And I'd speak to them and they'll say, oh, we messed up on this. You know, they're just humans trying to tell the story themselves. And I know people get really annoyed with them flicking back to their pits and showing it. But if you watch the race without those moments, without Julián Márquez biting his nails or without, you know, someone's girlfriend
like Domizia freaking out.
It misses a story. And the reason they're doing that is storytelling. It's not, they're not there. They're not going back there to break up. They want to show the action all the time. They absolutely do want to do that. But it's so that you can tell the tension. And you can't tell tension. You never see a rider's face. You don't see their emotions. You see them on the faces of the people in the pits, in the garages. So I completely understand it. And when you're on about those battles at the back, I completely get it. But then if something happens to the guys who are out front,
you get ridiculed for not showing that
moment. So you've got to be telling the story of the race itself, which is obviously who's going to win it.
Yeah.
And I think there was one earlier this year where they missed the rider crossing the line. I can't remember who it was. And they got pilloried for it because there was a battle going on for second. And it's like, well, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. I sort of do have sympathy for them with, you know, they've got 50 feeds coming in, whether it be from the 25 track cameras, heli cameras, all the RF cameras that are down pit, like, you know, they've got onboards as well. They've got so many feeds that they're trying to tell this story corner by corner that I do have sympathy with them. But there are times myself where I'm hoping that director's listening, knowing they're not, especially not listening to, they might be listening to Matt Burton and Lewis Sudderby or something, but they won't be listening to us. And it's just like, I think we definitely should be seeing this last lap here from or whatever's happening, which has happened a couple of times recently. But
I do notice the commentators do that sometimes. They go, can be nice to see the battle up here.
Yeah, because,
and that's the director listening in, is it?
Well, no, they're not. They're not listening. they may listen to Matt's. They may listen to Matt and Lewis's commentary. Yep. They might do that on occasion because they're obviously part of the Dorna feed and they might be listening in. But they've got too many other things to be worrying about. They also have contractual things to be worrying about. You know, they've got to be, you know, the sponsorship boards around the racetrack. They send reports to all the teams about how many times they've been on screen. So they will need to show Trackhouse at some point. If you often notice, first part of practice, they'll often show Somkiat Chantra in Moto2, or they'll show Jake Dixon, or maybe Jacob Ralston, you know, early on.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
At the start of a session, to make sure that every country gets a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
That they're going out to, everyone gets a little bit.
Yeah.
Because they do want to be able to say, look, we've shown your rider, we've done this, and everyone needs it for their sponsors. They send all teams reports how many times the riders have been on screen at the end of the year.
So much to it, isn't there?
There's so much more than the you know, your average viewer appreciates is going on behind the scenes. Mm. And they do have the quotas. Right, we've not seen the sponsorship logo at turn six, and they'll have a wider shot coming through turn six, and you'll see the Visit and the Lucia in the back of the shot. You know, and all these things are important because that's what keeps the championship alive.
Interesting. Yeah. Just on that, before you were saying, what are your thoughts on radio communications going into the future? Is that a thing for the commentator that's going to be a real useful thing, or you're not fussed?
I'm not fussed by it, to be honest. Yeah. Look, I know some people are completely anti it. My understanding, and I've spoken to people about this, is that it's a push from race direction, actually, not from the TV people.
Yeah, right.
So this has come from
safety and stuff.
FIM and race direction.
Yeah.
People are ignoring flags. People aren't aware of things that are going on, you know. So we'd like to be able to give him a tap on the shoulder, effectively.
Right.
We want to be able to do that. Drop a position or watch out oil in turn six. Yeah. You know, these sorts of things. And I'm not completely anti it for that. Now, I've heard people talking about whether the system's dangerous or not. They're actually working on, it's a bone conducting system, and it'd be like a headband.
Yep.
And it's right here on the temples, and there's a little bone in there. Mm. You know, like fighter pilots have them.
Yep.
Right. They have them also here as well to be able to speak, but they have them here. And have you seen bone conducting headphones?
No.
Have you not seen those?
No.
So people who cycle or people who run, you can get them. They don't go in your ear. They sit on your bone up here.
Oh yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
so they don't go in your ear. They just sit. So they're developing. So there's a company called Audio Technica, Japanese company. We're working really heavily on this at the moment. In fact, I think Aleix was actually testing it on the Hush Hush in Japan because all the people were there. And it's like a sort of headbandy kind of thing, which some riders are wearing anyway. And this thing would go in and sit on your bone. Now, it's different for everyone. 1 millimeter here and there can be different. Yeah. But with that, you could hear that because it conducts through the bone in your cheek or in your head there.
Yeah.
And the idea is that if it's in your ear, you can't hear your bike and all these sorts of things. Yeah. And also, you can hear over the noise of bikes when it's on your bone like that. Look, for a safety point of view, I've not got a massive issue with it. If I'm a rider, I completely understand.
Yeah.
You know, where in cars, people have grown up. They've grown up knowing that there's at any moment someone could be speaking to you on the radio. So it's not such a... It's a lot more physical activity on a motorcycle as well. Things can shift quite easily. So, look, I don't know what it's going to offer in terms of entertainment value. I don't see it personally. Could it tell Jorge Martin not to come in?
Yeah,
I mean, even if they do, he's the one making the decision.
That's right.
As in, no rider's not going to pull in if they think it's raining. The team say, "Oh, stay out," and he's like, "What are you on about? It's absolutely pissing it down at the back of the racetrack."
Right.
You know, I know what the. So I don't know if that would change things. I don't know. I can see why they're doing it. I'm not a massive fan, if I'm completely honest. But I wasn't a fan of sprint races, and look where we are.
So. I know. Yeah, are you a fan of them now? I'm assuming, or. Are you a fan of them now?
Am I a fan of sprint races now? I'm still a purist at heart. I still think I don't like the fact that we've got a grid. Like, we've noticed it a lot this year, whether it be Pecco Bagnaia way down the order or Marc Marquez way down the order. And then that's two races then that you get punished for that.
Yeah.
You know, I think it might... I'd have it like a bit of a super pole-y, like they're doing World Superbike or they've done in British before. Maybe the top three rows are the top... nine finishing the race, and then the rest are done from qualifying further down. I don't know. I just think you're stymied twice in a weekend for something that goes on in qualifying. And there's a potential that the championship could be won even earlier because more points are being dished out for it. You also have a feeling of which way Sunday's going to go. And I know there have not been that many doubles, but there have been quite a lot of doubles. And I think it just cheapens Sunday a little bit. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt about it. It's been a show.
Yeah.
It's been fun to watch. Yeah. And last year there was a thing about the argument about injuries and the physical toll on riders. And I think that's a fair comment as well. But I can't deny, even though I might not be a massive fan of the concept, I can't deny it's been entertainment. And this is an entertainment product.
Yeah, that's it. I think for us as well in Australia, having qualifying on like 7 p.m. at night on a Saturday night is just awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's prime.
Because it's early for us. Like usually we have qualifying was at 10, 11 p.m. Yeah. Now the sprint race is. But, you know, you can choose to watch the sprint race the next morning if you want to.
It does work for Australia, though. We actually say we've got the best time zone for European MotoGP because Moto3 starts at 7 p.m. on a Sunday night and then GP starts at 10. Like it.
I know. Japan was on at like 6 o'clock at night.
It was weird.
And we're like, I don't like this.
Yeah. We like it at night. It's so funny.
I'd rather the missus be a bear, not annoying me.
That's the thing. Obviously, in Europe, the concept is on a Sunday, you and your mates all get round and you have a couple of beers in the afternoon and then it's done and dusted, you know? Yeah. So you guys obviously have it a different way. I feel for the people in America, in the US, because obviously normally in Europe, they're getting up early anyway for 8 in the morning or whatever. I suppose these ones might be all right, would they? The Asia-Pacific races might be okay.
It's 3 a.m. in Europe. The race starts, I believe.
So then another 5 hours back then for New York for Eastern time. So that's not too bad actually for these races. But for the rest of the year, they're really shafted.
Yeah.
Like qualifying's middle of the night.
Yeah.
And then you've got to get up early in the morning if you want to watch the race. So sorry, everyone who's in the US.
It's hard to grow a sport like that for someone to be so committed to watch it as well, you know, that time frame. And we're lucky enough to have that, you know. We have some really rough races like Qatar, Argentina.
Yeah.
They're in the middle of the night. But it's probably only 6 or 7 a year.
Yeah. Not even. I think it's probably three or four, really.
It'd be three. Yeah.
And then we've got the European times, which is the best, and then all the Asian countries. So we're fine.
Yeah. It's not too bad, is it?
No.
No, very lucky for that.
I love that. I love the idea of it being on a... It's a Sunday night, though.
Mm.
Like, if you're not working Monday, it's all right. If you're up at 7 in the morning and you're taking the kids into school on a Monday, and I had a couple of beers watching the MotoGP last night, I feel a little bit worse for wear on a Monday morning.
It's funny, our culture is like drinking piss and, you know, having a good time. But I'm telling you, no one gets together and watches like MotoGP or Formula One and has beers. No one.
Not on a Sunday night.
No, it's just not a thing like at all.
All right.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
We do it.
Yeah, you would. Italians.
Yeah, different.
I definitely have a couple of beers.
Yeah, we get.
We fire up a barbecue between
Moto2 and MotoGP.
Mm.
Like,
yeah.
And get a few people over. It's good fun.
I like it.
Even late at night. Like, it's.
You eat dinner at 10 o'clock at night usually anyway because you're Italian. So
yeah, that's
different.
Right.
Different. 5 o'clock for Aussies, mate.
Different breed. Couldn't do it. It's way too early.
6:30 in
You're
my
hungry
household.
Again. You're hungry again at 10, but
but there are some people that do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, it's just not a thing for. Well, what I've grown up with, but I know in the like British culture, it's like massive sport at the pub watching. But for us, it's not as much. It's probably AFL is the only thing that we do.
Yeah, Sunday afternoon. Watching the football at the pub is quite very common, and when World Cup's on, football like that, it is, you go and watch it at the pub.
Yeah.
That's what you do. All your mates get together, you get a table down a pub and
we're not as patriotic as the Poms in Australia anymore, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
No, we've lost a lot of patriotism here.
I can't believe that.
I know, it's unbelievable. Everyone's against each other and... It's a different time.
Really? Okay. All right, I'll take it.
Not to get all down and down.
Thanks, Tom.
I was looking forward to the Ashes this winter.
We'll still belcher, but...
Yeah, I won't doubt it.
Standard Aussie procedure.
Yeah.
What's it like working with Nick Harris? Because we've grown up listening to a lot of him as well, and we've always spoken so highly of him. He seems to be incredible.
No, he's great. I learned so much off Nick over the years. He was, to myself and Matt Roberts, he was a bit like a... I would say a father figure, but he'd hate me for saying that. I wouldn't necessarily say it, but I think we kept him young at the time as well. And just great to work with. He absolutely loved the sport, passionate about it. And you could tell that. You could tell ultimately. And it's the same for Matt doing it now and myself in the UK and the US and that. We are fans, really. We do just love it as well. We're just embedded and we... you know, we work doing our love, and Nick's one of those who, you know, done it for years, done his Formula One stints as well, and yeah, just absolutely married to this sport.
Yeah,
it was, you know, he didn't want to really finish when he did, really, I don't think, in his heart of hearts. And yeah, I speak to him. I saw him earlier this year. Keep in touch with him whenever I can. Whenever I get that, rarely get down his way, but got down his way last year with my little one to see him. And yeah, he's a top man, great to work with. Yep. And as I say, learned a lot, particularly in the commentary arena from Nick. Yeah, definitely.
It's amazing. And commentary just makes all the difference. I've spoken about it again so many times, but commentary is just, it really makes it.
Yeah, commentary also, we call it Marmite. I suppose we call it Vegemite here, but you either love it or you hate it. You will get commentators, and I've got them, who I don't like. I don't like listening to, don't like their styles, and other people absolutely love them. And it's par for the course. We always say, like, 50% will love you, 50% will hate you. Doesn't matter, I'm doing it anyway. So we're going to do it to the best of our abilities. That's what we always try and do. And I hope, you know, I know you guys over here at the moment don't get our commentary. I know you have in the past. You know, there was something with that KO thing last year.
We had one race, Silverstone last year, which was actually, it was a bit of an uproar here.
I'm not going to get into that side of everything that went on that.
As soon as you have a change, someone changes something, people fucking, their heads explode.
Even worse when it's not announced that's going to happen. You switch on and go, I think they made a mistake. Guys, you've got the wrong commentary on. I completely understand it.
I personally enjoyed it, like something a bit different, but like the people who've been sitting there watching the same guys doing the same thing for that many years. I mean, it was a big adjustment when Nick Harris retired, I think.
Yeah.
And then Simon Crafer came through.
People hated Simon straight away.
Yeah. We hated Simon. We're like, why is this guy? It's so weird hearing a Kiwi on the coverage. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. So wrong.
Yeah.
Like, the guy is incredible.
Yeah, we knew. So we with myself and Neil Hodgson, Neil in particular, is very close with Simon, done a lot of track days with him over the years. And we helped as much. And that's from another rival TV. And Matt Burt was doing the same. Everyone. Because you want it to work. And you know, you want it to work because you like Simon. We all, you know, loved him as a person. And so people just do need time. What you got to understand is everyone who's doing that job knows that if people don't like him or people are saying things about him, they know it's happening.
Yeah.
But they're just trying to do their best. They are trying to do things to the best of their ability. And for some people, you never win people over, and others, you know, do. You know, it's just that's the game that you're in. You're out there, you know, talking about a sport that people love. And as you say, you get used to it. You get used to a sound, as you said. Yeah. You got used to Nick Harris's voice over the years, and it takes some adjustment.
Yeah, it does.
I think we've got now a great team. Who I commentate with Neil Hodgson, obviously World Superbike champion, former MotoGP, 500 and MotoGP rider. We've got Michael Laverty, who's a team owner, but a MotoGP rider himself, a British Superstock champion. You know, he's Supersport champion. He's a top tech. He's our Simon Crafer, you know, so he will explain things. If people could hear MLAV a lot of places around the world, I mean, some of the knowledge that he has is just phenomenal tech-wise on that side. We have Sylvain Guintoli, who's sadly not around at the moment, working with us. But Sylvain, obviously, he's currently testing for Suzuki and now for BMW in World Superbike. And he's still riding. He tested the Michelin tyres, was trying to help them push on their front tyres. So we've got there three experts who speak so well, but they explain things in a very, very simple way.
Yes.
So it's quite accessible. It's accessible for the non-rider, non-racer, even though they are big tech head racers who know everything that's going on these motorcycles. And then in our team, we have Susie Perry, who's been presenting this, you know, between World Superbike and this for, you know, nigh on 30 years, you know. So there's so much experience in it. But then when that happened at Silverstone last year, you're like, oh, sorry, guys, people like it. Well, some people like it in the UK, you know, in the US and that, which we're going out there now. But these things happen.
So it's funny you actually heard about that. Like, it must have been quite a big news.
Well, we knew it was going out.
I thought it was a mistake.
No, if you notice, that weekend, there was a lot more Aussie focus.
Yeah.
And that's because we knew we're going out. Like, we go out in the States, so we speak about Joe Roberts a bit more than we might do about other writers, because you've got to know your audience, you know?
Yeah.
You've got to know...
Got to know what's going on.
We actually do speak about Jack Miller and Brad Binder a lot, because we don't have any Brits in MotoGP, so we talk about the English-speaking guys.
Because
they're probably the guys that your audience can relate to that little bit more, you know? So that tends to happen. But yeah, we knew it was going out because it had happened.
They could have announced it. I mean, they could have said something.
No, it happened at the start of the year. So the plan originally was that they were going to, in the UK, they were going to do the world feed on Fridays.
Yeah.
And we were just going to do Saturdays and Sundays. They were going to save us so that we were, you know, and on Friday, you know, we travel a bit later.
Yep.
There was uproar the other way around, you know? Some people were saying, what the hell is this? Isn't that, get us back?
Funny.
And then from the next race. So that had happened at the start of that year.
Yeah, right.
In Qatar. So it you get so used to commentary, and I completely understand it. You'll have famous commentators that you'll have got used to over the years, whether it be your Barry Sheen and your Bill Woods, or whether it be whoever it be that you've got used to listening to over the years. They've told a story for you. It's like your parents telling you a bedtime story. It's always been that voice, that person telling you the story. And it can be that it could grate on you from the start and you'd never get over it. You never like it. But, you know, ultimately all those people are just doing their best.
100%. It's... When Nick Harris retired, because we've always had the world feed, and I think it was Matt Burt and someone else
took over, Steve Day,
we always talk about how a good, smooth transition that was, though. It was kind of just filled the spot perfectly.
Because they're all professionals, you know, they are all guys who work hard to be professional on these things, you know. So, and Steve's working with us now on TNT. He's filling
I saw Steve at the pub today, dude.
Yeah, he's had a couple of froffies.
So Steve's doing some. So, because for the last 2 or 3 years, I've been doing every single session, pretty much every single session over race weekend. It came in because I was on these triple races, and it was like the 8th race in 9 weekends, and you're like, you're absolutely done. You can hardly speak. You sound like you've had 50 Marlboro, and, you know, and you've not slept, you know, because you got there and you've had these wild races and you're traveling all over. So Steve's lightened the load this year for me, which has been great to have. And Steve's a top man as well, obviously knows his way around everything, and he's doing BSB as well. You probably heard him
last lap
of the BSB, which was pretty special, wasn't it, at the weekend. So Steve's a good guy. Matt Burt's a top man, such a good journalist, knows everything that's going on in the sport. Like, nothing, you know, goes by without him knowing what's going on. So I think you've got it good. I think you have got it good down here. There's some good people working on it. I don't know what they're going to do post-Simon next year.
Yeah,
that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see what they come up with on that one. But I know everyone they've had working on it is, you know, they all give it the heart and soul, without a doubt.
Well, it's like Formula One. I mean, I think Martin Brundle, we get that feed here.
That's the Sky Sports feed in the UK. And David Croft and Martin Brundle.
And he's for 30 years, like, I'm a massive Formula One fan. And, like, for me, that's him. Like, if he's not there on the weekend, it affects my viewing.
Well, he switched. He was on the ITV coverage with James Allen, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then they switched, and Sky, and then... They took over and started using the Sky UK as a world feed.
James Allen, very underrated commentator, actually.
Yeah, I think it was good. He was good with James Allen.
He was really, really good.
He's still involved in a lot of stuff. He does a lot of with motorsport.com. I can't remember his involvement there, but he does a lot of the analytics stuff. He's got a few projects going on the side of stuff. Yeah. So, and still does the odd thing here and there. But yeah, great comment. Great recognisable voice as well.
Yeah,
and
he
had to fill Murray Walker's shoes.
I wouldn't like to have to jump
in those boots. But
It's like Murray Walker's another classic one. Like, the less he said was better. Like, it's like going back to cricket, it's like Richie Beno.
Which is an absolute legend. So he was the one, when I was a kid, genuinely, I've been trying to find it for ages. I used to have tapes of myself commentating as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And it'd be... trying to be Richie Beno, or it'd be trying to be Ted Lowe, who's like he was known as Whispering Ted Lowe, because he commentated on the snooker.
And it wasn't
the football commentator, although there was the famous one called Barry Davis, I'm trying to remember the name of someone else. Anyway, it was always trying to emulate those people as a kid. I used to tape myself hidden behind a sofa. I mean, you've got a right old setup here, I have to say. I used to have this tape deck where it was old school. You'd have to press play and record. And I had the only microphone was on the side of this thing and I'd hold it to my mouth and I'd be practicing commentating when like a little kid.
That's cool.
I wish I had those tapes now. I bet my mum's got them locked away somewhere. But I used to make tapes of myself commentating on sport from behind the sofa.
They're doing it from a young age. There you go.
Yeah, well, it's what I always had wanted to do. I just never thought it was gonna happen.
That's incredible. It's like going back to Richie Better. I mean, that Shane Warne ball, the century, and all he said was, "He's done it." Yeah. It's gone down as like one of the best commentary. He's done it. Like, that's it.
Well, sometimes like, the less you say is the better. I'm very much a talker. Yeah. It's weird, right? Because different sports work in different ways. Like if I was on football, I think you'd talk a lot less because there's more stuff happening that just run of the mill. Whereas I find in motor racing, there is always something happening because it's a split second sport where things are going on. I do find that there's always, especially in MotoGP, it's a 40-minute sprint race.
Yeah.
I mean, a football match is 90 minutes. Your Formula One's 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know, MotoGP races, especially sprint races, a blink and you miss it.
Yeah.
And so leaving big gaps actually is hard sometimes. You try to let things flow. You'll try and, with an onboard, you'll try and let that flow.
Yeah.
Try and celebrations, let people listen and hear and enjoy it. But in hand-to-hand combat in races, it's hard. It's hard to leave those gaps, I think. It's a different. Well, it's cricket. It's all about the peace and quiet and the silence and the noise of the leather on willow, and that's part of it. That's part of the enjoyment.
Yeah, that's true.
When you're actually sat there, it's part of, you know, it's part of cricket.
I have to admit, British commentators for me, for me, for motor racing, it has to be British commentators.
Really?
Yeah. 100%.
I've heard that actually from people in the States. I know Lee Diffie, who's an Aussie, who's gone over and done, been really successful
IndyCars and stuff.
And he does all the stuff on the IndyCar, and he does their Olympics coverage as well. He's a great, great lad, actually, is Lee. And but I think the Americans felt the same. Obviously, myself and Nick did that, and we got that a lot. Like people said, it just sounds right with the British voice, which
it does.
It's 100%.
Yeah. It definitely needs
just
to be
British.
It just
goes hand in hand, I think. I don't know what it is. It's the way you articulate your words, and with motor racing, I think it's.
Yeah,
and it's probably what we're used to. But you're like trying to listen to an American commentator.
Doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
You mean an announcer?
Yeah.
You called an announcer in the States. Yeah.
And Aussie commentators as well. Same. Hard to hear, like hard to listen to. So, like, we used to have the Channel 10 coverage back in the day.
Only for some certain races. I remember Laguna Seca for some reason, they would just punch out Channel 10 coverage.
Yeah, and it was weird. It was like.
It was probably the time of day.
Yeah.
It was probably when they were 6 a.m. race. Exactly.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And it was, I remember Formula One back in the day, like they used sometimes like, technical difficulty. And they used to do the commentators from Channel 10. You were like, what the fuck am I listening to? This is terrible. Get it back on. And going back to Martin Brundle, like that'd be big shoes to fill when he
retires. Hangs up his boots. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it has to be sooner rather than later. Like he's been doing it for a long, long time.
I think they're already trying to phase him out. He's not at every Grand Prix these days.
Even Crofty's not in every Grand Prix.
No, but that's what they've got in Formula One. They've got the money, haven't they, to have two teams doing it effectively. Yeah, like you look at a lot of the teams are doing that.
They've got
24 races. They have split. They'll have to start thinking about it here if they're getting the 22 races and testing as well.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, testing's a lot of work when you do that as well, isn't it? It's an 8-hour...
Our job is 20 weeks a year as it stands, 22 next year. It's easy compared to being an engineer, a mechanic for one of the MotoGP teams in particular, but even the Moto3 teams as well, because in the MotoGP teams, the odd one might go in business class or premium economy. Your Moto3 team, your Moto3 rider, but a lot of Moto3 teams will be in economy, in cattle class. Mm. They'll be going up, they might be flying, they might be driving the truck as well to the racetrack. They might used to stay in the racetrack. They're not allowed to do that anymore, but as in they'd sleep in the truck.
Yeah.
But they'll be, you know, the first to get there, the last to leave, they're packing up the thing on the weekend, all the while making sure that you're sending the guy out on track with the brakes that are working, you know, the responsibility that you've got. And then when the season's done, you're going back to the workshop wherever the team is based in Europe and you're breaking the bikes down, you're getting it all set. Then Jeez. You might go on a training trip out to Honda in Japan and they're going to teach you how to build next year's bike. And then you've got to go to a test that's in wherever. And then it's Christmas. And then, oh, actually, you need to come back out to Japan to build the bikes and do all this. And then you've got to go to the workshop to build the bikes. And then, oh, you're testing, you're in Malaysia. And suddenly, you know, it's a 52-week a year thing. And it's going to take your toll on people. But when you see some of the people that are still there now that have been doing that job for, you know, 40 years, you think, fair play to them.
It must be hard being away from your family for a long time and everything. That must take its toll after years, does it?
I think for some people, the travelling is pretty normal that it does. I've always been used to it. Most of my professional career has been here doing this, so I'm all right with it. Just, you know, got used to it over the years. But I know that there's a lot of turnover. Personnel in the paddock for family reasons, and who can blame them? And maybe if the problem is, it's not like Formula One where there's enough money sloshing about that you can have two squads.
That's right.
You know, you can have two people. The TV can mix things up and send a different, you know, presenter and commentator out to the next race because you've got four races on the bounce, which I think they've got, haven't they, in Formula One at one point during the year. There's not the money and the luxury to do that in bike racing.
Yeah.
It is. Bang for your buck, pound for viewers' eyes on it. You know, the sport is a top-level sport, elite level, but I think it is cheap for what it is. Providing over a race weekend, you know, Friday 8 a.m. till Sunday 3 p.m., providing 8 hours a day of action, that's pretty good. You know, your football match is 90 minutes, or so. You might have a little bit before and after. Your AFL games, you know, cricket, I suppose, is something that for 5 days would fill it, but look, most people get bored by it. I think that's why I think motor racing and then, you know, in MotoGP, you do well to have top level, world class sport for so long, so many times every year. Hey, it could be saturation. You know, I know, 22 races.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, 44 races.
Who's got 22 weekends to dedicate to that?
And why it's hard, I guess, you're a Brit or in Europe, you know, you got to dedicate your Sunday, where I guess for us and us growing up, it's only a Sunday night.
That's so
much easier for us in a way.
Yeah.
You know, but if it's just a Sunday lunchtime, there's no way I could get away for 22 weekends.
No way.
You'd be doing something in the garden or something, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Don't know. I don't even have a garden.
You'd be stiff on that one, I reckon.
Yeah, Tommy would be stuffed.
I would be stuffed.
You'd be in trouble.
Always in trouble.
I got a lot of chores to do at home, unfortunately. But for me, like, I'm a big Formula One fan, big MotoGP fan. I hate when they're on the same weekend. It's too much.
Yeah, it is way too
much to watch.
How's it work this weekend? What is it, Austin? When's that?
Yeah, 6 a.m. Monday.
Right, okay.
But I'll be snoring my head off at that point.
Yeah, it's going to be a big riders after party, apparently. Yeah. So we're just trying to figure that one out.
All right, okay. Where's that one this year?
At the hotel in the corner.
All right.
Well, hosting, so.
All right, okay.
I got Jacob, I got Senna coming, I got a whole crew.
We got Gavin.
Yeah.
I'll be on my way. We're flying out Sunday night.
Oh, no.
We get on, you know, one of these things in these races is just get to the next race.
Yeah.
Just get out of there because otherwise you feel like you're losing time, downtime.
Yeah, okay.
And so a lot of times on these.
Yep.
When Australia would be the last race of the triple, you'd stay here till you wouldn't mind going out Monday night, whatever. Or you might want to get home. But on these, I think we fly on Monday via Hong Kong to go over to Thailand and then you're there and then you're actually there. You know that nothing's going to go wrong with your flight. You're not going to get messed up.
You're not rushing around.
You're there. You're done. And so,
and you get a couple of days downtime in Thailand. Are you going to be relaxing in a nice couple villa somewhere?
Like a day. We just stay in. All the crew stay in Bangkok for a day.
Yeah, okay.
Then go up to Buriram. There's only like one or two flights a day, so most of the paddock are staggered out with which day. You want to be in Buriram as little time as you can, really.
Yeah, just not a lot there.
There's not that much doing. Yeah, it's a small town, really.
Yeah.
For, I suppose it's a city, but it's small compared to some of the places we do go.
We've got a couple of mates going out next weekend, so they're going to do some research for us because I'd love to go to that first round next year.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. Yeah. It'd be great. And I'll tell you what, the atmosphere is fantastic.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. They fill that place and it's so different to anywhere else that we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't say don't go to it.
Yeah.
We go to a lot of places that are better than it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It's just hard for us. I mean, Europe's a big be committed.
Yeah, it's a big trip. No,
I'd say go to Lombok.
Yeah. The boys were saying today was incredible Lombok. They loved it.
Yeah, it's a they'll have loved, of course. The kids have absolutely loved it. I mean, it's it is a surfer's paradise right on the beach. Yeah. And the thing is, there's not that many people there, which is a shame because Indonesia is MotoGP nuts.
Yeah.
It's, I love it.
They're absolutely wild for it. So it is a real shame that more people aren't allowed in. But even the price point that they've got there is too much for a lot of the locals to get in.
So.
Also, to get there's not that many places to stay. But it's, it's like going back to your backpacking days. And then actually having a MotoGP race at the same time, you know, is that it
sounds amazing.
Yeah, it is. It genuinely is.
Maybe we'll tick that one on next year.
It's what Bali was that people used to go to 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember going to Bali a long, long time ago, and it's changed a lot, you know. And
Bali's the same price as Melbourne now to get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, that's it. Yeah. Whereas Lombok hasn't reached that point yet, and it's still, it's got some little great places down in Kuta anyway where we go.
That's a good thing about Australia though, and cows, we're very lucky. Like you go onto the island and its own little MotoGP hub, you know, and you can be out, obviously the Pinos, and someone's going to walk in, the fans love it. It's such
it's amazing. And true fans fans come down.
Yeah. It's a great place. I love coming to Phillip Island. Again, as we said right at the start, I'd love it to be coming at a different time of year, but it is what it is, and we're going to have to deal with it. But I feel like the island likes it happening.
Oh, yeah.
I know a lot of people do move out, you know.
Like, parents.
Yeah, exactly. Prime example. I know a lot of people aren't here for the weekend.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people do know that this is not a lifeblood for the island. I know a lot of people come and live here. It's a beautiful place to come to. But it offers something a little bit different for the island, doesn't it? For a couple this and World Superbike.
It's huge.
For
the businesses and stuff.
It's very important for the island to have the event. Because there'd be a lot of businesses that wouldn't survive without this weekend. They get a lot of people coming down for summer holidays and stuff. Yeah. But this weekend would bring in so much money for everyone. Like every restaurant's packed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Coles and the Woolies, they're all selling out of everything. So it's good. And I've been coming here since I was, you know, a little tacker. I love it filling up for the weekend. It's the best.
No, I do love it. It's one of the highlights. People ask me, what your favorite racetrack? This is my favorite racetrack. In fact, I've got like a little, someone did me it was an outline that was done on with wood. Of the racetrack on my wall at home. It's a beautiful little thing because it was like, oh, what's your favourite racetrack? I was like, Phillip Island. Because there's nowhere like it. There isn't. It's a brilliant place to come to. It's a rider's track. It will provide good racing, definitely in Moto3 and Moto2. And I'm almost certain in MotoGP if Martin doesn't have the weekend like he was having last year. And then still managed to mess it up. So,
Do you think there needs to be more personality in MotoGP, because like Tom was talking about Lorenzo and Simoncelli, and we're watching like they used to really have war of words and press conferences could be so fiery, where everything seems to be, I guess, a little bit more, you know.
Well, at the moment it's quite steady. Pecco and Jorge are not friends, but they're not, you know, sworn enemies and they hate each other or anything, but they're definitely not friends. And it's because there hasn't been niggle. How many people have got nice things to say about Marc Márquez? Mm. Not that many, but there's no doubt about it. This year, Mark, the chauffeur, has followed him.
Yeah.
Love him or hate Marc Márquez, whatever you do. If you do, it's because he's in the midst of it. He's in the thick of it.
100%.
And this year, he's brought that into it, definitely. And Aya's had a little bit of that as well. You know, there's always something happening around where Aya is, some part of the racetrack. I don't know. I think there are tons of really good personalities in MotoGP. I really do. And, you know, you love her. I mean, we love Dovi because he was quiet and thoughtful. And so I think, you know, ultimately unsuccessful as well, Dovi, in terms of winning the championship in MotoGP. But I think Pecco is that kind of quiet, calm, thoughtful 100%. Kind of person. And Jorge is the opposite. And I think they are there. And maybe it's our fault in the media for not necessarily getting that across, what characters we do have. But I think we have got a bit of a mix of characters. But I do know what you're saying. You do want the fiery.
Want the spice.
There's been the odd bit here and there. I think there has been the odd little
Pedro was trying to spice
Pedro's,
it up.
Yeah, he's the one.
Well, Pedro's come in with a mission to do that.
Yeah.
You look at him not celebrating on the podium. There was the one, was it Misano, when Marc Márquez won and Marc was trying to get Martin and Acosta to celebrate. Do you know, when he was doing his ridiculous dancing on the podium.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And just go back and watch it. And Pedro's like, No. Pedro, if you go back, right? I just did a documentary, which I wish you could guys could all see. We did it with North One, who produced the MotoGP coverage in the UK, on Pedro. I went to his hometown.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome.
I'm not going to recommend how you might be able to go and get a dodgy copy of it, but there are, you know, I'm sure there's ways you can find around it. But we've shown it a couple of times this year, and hopefully at some point they'll put it on for streaming. But he basically, his aim is to mix things up.
Yeah. Like,
and he's come in, and you can see it. You can see it. Now, it wasn't in the documentary, but I remember seeing interviews with him when he was in The Rookie saying that Marc Márquez was his hero. And since then, if you had noticed, he will now talk about Valentino Rossi being his hero, yeah, for example. Or, you know, and that Marc really wasn't that bothered. And he's clearly thought, right, if I'm going to win this championship, I'm going to need to ruffle his feathers.
Yeah.
And I'm going to need to try and play the games. The game's not going to work on Pedro, I don't think, anyway. But I find it quite funny because I can sort of see Marc going, I can see you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I did.
That's what I did.
That's what I did when I was your age, yeah. And Pedro's got that. He's got that edge. He doesn't care. He doesn't want anyone to love him. He just wants to win.
Yeah, I love that.
He's a great character. He's different to all the others. He's very, you know, he's playing a part. I genuinely feel like he's playing a part because he's a nice kid. That's one thing I found out in this documentary. He's such a really, really nice kid. But he is playing a role of, I'm going to be the disruptor. Well, I need to be the disruptor. Yeah, I don't mind. Love me or hate me, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to say
what we need. But
yeah, 100%. I genuinely think he's going to be a next big superstar. And we spoke about this with Senna today. You know, it's not like you have to be this overlandish character like Valentino Rossi. You still just have to be yourself. And I guess that's what translates to fans and then how they get fans at the same time.
We don't want you knocking someone off a bike and then hugging them on the bike back to the pits like Vinales and Pecco.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to punch on, keep punching on.
Like, lay him out. You know, take him down.
Be edgy headbutt situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, absolutely. We want to just see more fighting in the right way.
Yeah. No, I do. I know what you're saying. I do. I think it is there. I think there are bits of needle here and there. But as I say, well, when they've started kicking lumps out of each other, when it gets to desperation stakes, when Marc is ruffling feathers next year on the factory bike, you're going to see it. You are going to see it. And long may it continue.
Were you licking your chops when Marc Márquez and Valentino Rossi had that massive kind of falling out and feud? Because it really divided the sport in a way.
Oh, absolutely. It did.
Yeah, I don't like the tribal side of that.
I'm with you.
I'm a fan of the sport. Obviously, I'm neutral. I've got rider favourites, people that I love and, you know, really do enjoy spending time with and speaking to. And there's others that I don't necessarily. But I'm neutral in terms of, I just love the sport. I just want good racing. I want good battles and a little bit of needle. You want all these things thrown into the mix. And that, the incident and the subsequent polarization, but I don't think it's just in MotoGP. I think it's just what social media has 100%. Done to the world in general. Yeah. So it's not just,
correct,
you know, motorcycle based. But yeah, I don't like the polarization because, do you know what? Valentino's a top man and an unbelievable racer, and so is Marc Márquez.
Yeah.
You know, and they are both of them, pretty much, you put a microphone in front of them and they are the people that we see behind the microphone. Pretty much, they're those kinds of characters who will give you the time of day, always say hello, you know, and generally will be good in front of the camera as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's all right. It has got very tribal, and realistically, it's, yeah, social media is the whole point of that. But
yeah,
you know, we.
Hey, but it's also drives interest. I think it drives a bit of interest to have rivalries like that.
Definitely, you know, but you love to love someone and you love to hate someone. And we always go back, this is my weekly Cheeseburger Lorenzo segment. We love Jorge Lorenzo. We call him Cheeseburger because he gained a couple of pounds. And we call him Cheeseburger Lorenzo. I don't know if he likes that.
There's a few cheeses around.
There's a few Cheeseburger Barros back in the day. But we look now back at, I hated Jorge Lorenzo. Like, he was against Valentino Rossi. He was a young showman. He was cocky. But you look back at him now and I love him. He was great for the sport. You know, I've never really met him, but I'm sure he's a lovely guy. But, you know, he had that thing where I was just like, oh, I hated him.
But now, it was edge.
And that's what
made him a winner.
Yeah.
What made him a winner was his edge, was his desire that nothing is getting in the way of me doing it. And he will do it in his own way. I remember him coming in. I was possibly the first, one of the first people to interview him when he came in, and it was 15th birthday. I remember it. His birthday was on the Saturday, and he was riding the Derby, Caja Madrid Derby, back in Jerez. And I remember, and he didn't smile throughout the whole interview. I'm like, oh my God, this 15-year-old kid is right grumpy git, you know. And and it just went on, but he was just the determination from a young age was to win. It was to win. Casey Stoner rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way because, well, he had one single mind, single objective was to go out there and ride bikes fast and win. Why? And their thought would be, well, why would I do anything different? And all these fripperies and silly things getting in the way. And Jorge, if you read his books, you know, he wanted to be, loved is maybe not the wrong word, but he wanted to put on a show, or he wanted to do things. So he thought he had to do certain things as well. But ultimately, he just wanted to win. And he's an interesting, really interesting. Someone could do a brilliant psychological study of of Jorge Luente.
Cheeseburger.
Definitely. Yeah.
He's an interesting cat, isn't he? We've seen him in the back of the pits and stuff, and he's not. Yeah.
He's chilled out a bit, I will say, over the last couple of years.
Highly strung back in the day.
He's just been doing some stuff. I've been looking recently. I think he works for DAZN, which is a Spanish broadcaster. Yeah. He does like a few races for them over the year. And he was saying how, you know, there were times how he didn't necessarily enjoy it. And actually, looking back now, he realised he should have enjoyed it more. He did enjoy things sometimes in his career, but he said he looked back at times, he's like, should have enjoyed stuff more. And actually looks back and now he says he actually misses it, and he didn't for a couple of years. So, you know, we have to remember these kids are maturing in front of your eyes.
Yeah,
and some of them don't necessarily mature until they've finished.
Yep.
Don't really realise what they've had in front of them.
Yeah.
Because they've known nothing else. They don't know school. They don't know education. You know, this is their education is right here in front of them in the paddock.
Yeah. God, how interesting.
Yeah.
Was he obviously still famous and massive in Spain, Jorge Lorenzo?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but wasn't loved. Weirdly, Danny Pedrosa was the loved one.
I thought that was the case. Yeah.
He was the loved one in terms of he was like the housewife, not housewife, mum's favourite.
Yeah. So
he did an advert for a brand called Color Cow, which is like your nighttime cocoa. It's like, you know, you have, and it would be his mum giving it to Danny. That was the other. And then Marc Márquez took that job off him, you know, when he came through. He was the next one who was on that, you know. And it was like the national drink that you have before going to bed.
Yeah.
And
funny.
That was Danny Pedrosa. And Jorge wasn't loved in the same way they were, but still was a huge deal.
Yeah.
Obviously a five-time champion. So. You know, a big old deal back in Spain. Yeah.
Interesting.
That is really cool. Away from the track, what gets you going?
I am a sports geek. They call me. I'm watching sport all the time. I watch football, cricket, rugby, you name it, pretty much. My other half, absolutely. Is not on board with it.
It's good to separate it though, you know. Like,
you've got to have your things, haven't you? It's just mine's 24/7. But I genuinely, you ask any of our team, and I'm right across all sports, really. Football's the one. I watch Leeds United when I'm at home every time I can. Then when I'm not doing that, I'm watching sports somewhere else. Genuinely.
How funny.
Genuinely, I'm just a sports freak. That's it.
Yeah, nice. And you ride as well on?
Yeah, I do. I haven't actually got it out of the shed this year. My Ducati, I've got a scrambler.
Yeah, nice.
But I haven't had it out for a while. I've got a three-year-old at home who came along at the end of COVID. So she's turning four in a month. So that limits your ability to go riding your motorcycle, especially when you're away for 20 weekends of the year and your other half works full time. So when I'm home, I'm pretty much house husband, dad, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I do ride, but just not you know, never no, competitively on a racetrack a few times, but I am useless.
Join the club. Yeah, I was going to say, that's why we're down that same path too.
We
do it for the love, you know. We do it for the love.
That's it. Yeah. And you can't. I always see myself as a journalist in this. I'm not an expert.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert on the riding side. I will never you know, suggest that I know what a rider's done wrong or right. I leave that to the people who are working alongside me. I'm there for the story. I'm there for the story rather than the expertise.
That's great.
That's amazing.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely it does. Yeah.
Gavin, it's been awesome to have you on. And before you go, we've got a bit of a present for you.
Oh, God. No, what is it?
You got room in your luggage?
Yeah.
So this
is for you.
Shout out to HJC Australia.
Oh, wow.
For hooking us up.
Cool.
Just a helmet for you, mate, with a little bit of a message and a thank you for coming on.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I can hold that for you.
You hold that. Go on.
Yeah, we really appreciate your time. Busy schedule and just a little token from us to you, mate.
Oh, cheers, guys. I really appreciate that. That's very touching, actually.
That's all right.
I really do.
We appreciate you coming on, mate.
Yeah, we appreciate the time. You know, we're only a little small operation here and we're getting the
professional, but small.
Professional and small, but we get the big dogs over from England. So it's really cool.
No, I appreciate it. And you guys keep doing it. And as you say, it's for the love.
Yeah, it is.
So you do that.
Yeah.
And that's why people all follow you and enjoy it. So keep it going. Long may it continue.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, mate.
Thanks,
Gavin.
Cheers, lads.
Thanks.